Like to begin by sharing with you about what's going on next Sunday. So we can go to the next slide, please. All right. We are going to have a combined English-speaking, Spanish-speaking service next Sunday. Vinicio Montes de Oca will be doing the preaching for us, and we'll have some of the brothers from the Spanish-speaking group that will be leading in service, also some from this English-speaking group will be leading. This will be an incredible demonstration. Our hope is it'll be an incredible demonstration of the unity that we have in Jesus Christ, and so we're calling it One in Christ Sunday. So I want to encourage you to come back next week as we have that special service together. And then immediately following our time of worship, we'll head down to the fellowship hall and share in a meal with one another. We are a group of people who are, first of all, striving to grow into the image of Jesus. And one of the ways that we do that is by sharing life together as a grace-filled and diverse community. And so next Sunday will be a sort of a tangible demonstration of that, sharing life together. So I want to encourage you to come back next Sunday. Also want to mention to you briefly about those who are greeters before Bible class, before worship time. We have folks out in the foyer who make it a point to help those that are coming in the door to feel welcomed and to demonstrate hospitality to them. I'm going to mention a few by name. I probably won't get everybody that is part of this greeting ministry, but I do want to mention a few. David Fuller and Bob Fry and Robert Copeland and Holly and Kelby Palmer and Wayne and Regan Walker. I want to specifically note them and the work they're doing. If you want to participate in that ministry, speak to any of those that I just mentioned to you. And of course, in a way, all of us are participants in the greeting ministry. Our hope is that we are all demonstrating an incredible amount of grace and love for everybody that comes in our doors. And so you can participate in sort of a formal way by talking to those that I mentioned, or let's just continually try to be this warm and friendly congregation. So I wanted to mention that this morning. 1 Peter chapter 2, it's a passage that we've looked at the last 2 weeks, and we're going to look at it again today. This passage is sort of the foundational teaching or instruction for our sermon series that we've been calling Keep the Church Weird. So Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 and 12, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that, though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day He visits us." As I was thinking about that passage, I recalled the words of Jesus to the disciples in John 15, specifically verse 19. Listen to what Jesus says to the disciples in John 15. And I believe as you think about 1 Peter 2, you'll hear echoes of Jesus' words in what Peter says to the Christians. And so here's what Jesus said in John 15, 19. "If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you." Now, these are strong terms that Jesus uses here to talk about who we are. But we recognize as we think about the strong words that Jesus has used that, in fact, we are different. We have been called to a different standard, a different way of life. And so as Peter says, we are foreigners and exiles in the world. As Jesus says, we don't belong to the world. We have been chosen out of the world. And so again, all of these are identity markers for us. These imply that the followers of Jesus, us, we will be weird or strange. In a sense, thinking of the words that Jesus uses, we are out of this world kind of people. And so we have different goals. We have different ways of assessing our lives. Our standard for our lives is different than the rest of the world. We have different priorities. In all of this, we have a mission. And it's what Peter says in 1 Peter 2. He says, living this different kind of life is all about others seeing your good deeds and glorifying God on the day that He visits us. So we have the opportunity to witness the way of God in the world so others will that don't know God will have a change of heart and will come to know Him and live for Him. And this all applies to parenting as well. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. I love what the comedian Jim Gaffigan says about parenting. Every night before I get my 1 hour of sleep, I have the same thought. Well, that's a wrap on another day of acting like I know what I'm doing. I wish I were exaggerating, but I'm not. Most of the time, I feel entirely unqualified to be a parent. I call these times being awake. So parents, can you relate to this, right? Shouldn't there be some sort of owner's manual for parenting? You have to have a class to drive a car and to do all these different things in life. When it comes to parenting, right, you're just kind of on your own. And so thinking about the challenges of being a parent, thinking about the fact that many of us probably feel very unqualified to this task, myself included, as I've been preparing for this sermon, I've been praying that what is shared this morning, simply put, may be helpful and hopeful. I promise you, I don't have this all figured out by any stretch of the imagination. I am no expert. In fact, I see myself as simply a partner with you in this journey. Our guiding question for this morning is, what does, based on Jesus' teaching in John 15, what does out of this world or weird parenting look like? I think it begins by seeing our children as God sees our children. Have you thought about that before? How does God see your children? As I was processing that, I thought of the words of the psalmist in Psalm 139, verses 13 and 14. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. And so first of all, as we think about how God sees our children, He sees them as fearfully and wonderfully made creatures, created beings. And so the fact that God sees our children in that way, what does that do about our parenting? How does that inform our role as parents? Well, first of all, I think it reminds us that we are to raise our children to know their true father. It's humbling and sobering to me thinking about my relationship with Adeline and Audrey, my two girls. Their true father is God. And I recognize, or I try to recognize, that they are going to flourish as human beings when they live in tune with the designer, who is God, the one that made them fearfully and wonderfully. It's not ultimately about them growing into my image, but about growing into the image of God. Excuse me, I need these. But it's about them knowing God and living for them. As much as I'd like to think, man, it's all about them being like me, we know that that would be a train wreck. That's not what we want. We want them to grow into the image of God. And along with that, no matter how much we love our children, and I know that we love our children, I know that you love your children. Think about this. God loves them just as much, if not more. The psalmist says that God created them. He designed them exactly how He desired them to be. And so thinking about that, he has called us as parents to partner with him, to partner with him in raising his created beings. And this is grace in itself. He has given us the privilege, the opportunity to raise his created beings. So, as I've mentioned, we are to raise them to grow into his image. We are to seek his counsel and his leadership as we think about raising our children. The theologian Thomas Merton wrote this: "The beginning of love is to let those we love be perfectly themselves, and not to twist them to fit our own image. Otherwise, we love only the reflection of ourselves we find in them." What I want us to focus on, and what Merton says there, is that we are not to twist other people, or for our context this morning, we are not to twist them to fit into our own image. No, we are to help them to grow into the image of God, remembering that our child, your child, is God's first. We have the privilege and honor of partnering with him. So that's the first thing. God sees our children as his own because that is who they are. And secondly, this: God sees our children as people to whom he gave his son. Paul wrote in Romans chapter 5, verse 10, "For if, while we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life?" We have been brought back into relationship to God by the atoning sacrifice of Jesus Christ. This is another act of God's grace. And so God not only created our children, but he gave his son to die for our children. This is the fullest extent of his love. This is our child's hope. It's our hope. And so we must continually be pointing our children to the source of hope and life, Jesus Christ. This, again, is such an act of mercy from God. He gave his son to die for us. Broken, weak. Paul uses the language of we're enemies. And so if God has given us grace, we ought to also give our children grace, showing them mercy, helping them to grow, standing alongside them or beside them through their struggles and pain as well. God has done it for us. And so, first of all, out of this world parenting is seeing children as God sees them. But secondly, it's about leading our children to Jesus. And so, as part of our vision is cultivating youth and family discipleship. It's about growing into the likeness or the image of Jesus Christ. And so hopefully we're continually processing that. What does that look like to lead our children to Jesus? I'm just going to throw out a few things this morning. This isn't exhaustive in this treatment of how we grow into Jesus. And again, I am learning this along the way. I'm partnering with all of you in this journey. But let's look at Mark chapter 10 for just a moment. Mark 10, 42 through 45. Of course, we know the context. Some of the disciples are having an argument about who is the greatest and who's going to sit on Jesus' side and throne and have all of this power. And in the midst of this conversation about greatness, about might and power and prestige, Jesus says this to the disciples, Mark 10, starting at verse 42. Jesus called them together and he said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them." And in effect, they sort of flex their muscles and power of the right to do this. And their high officials exercise authority over them. Verse 43, "Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant." So let's stop there for a moment. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And so the demonstration of true greatness, according to Jesus here in Mark 10, is service. And the one who spoke these words to the disciples, the one that is going to bend down and take the towel and wash the feet of the disciples. He's going to be the same one that willingly goes to the cross for enemies, for those who are broken and sinful. And so, greatness comes through service. And as we parent, as we care for our children and raise them, we must also demonstrate this heart of service. And service is selflessness. It's giving of ourselves. And that's one thing I'm certainly learning about parenting, right? I'm selfish. As I'm caring for somebody else, God is opening my heart up to the need to give myself away on behalf of somebody, on somebody else. So this service takes place in all kinds of different ways. Like, first of all, think about the service of presence. Simply the willingness to be where you are. Does that sound silly? To be where you are? Have you ever been with a group of people? Perhaps it's at lunch or dinner, even in a work setting. You're there, but you're a million miles away. You're thinking about all the other things that you need to be doing. You're thinking about the upcoming trip. You're thinking about all of the chores that need to be taken care of at home. I mean, does this resonate with any of you? And all of a sudden, this is the best. Someone says something. Maybe they've even been talking for 2 or 3 minutes, and your mind's been somewhere else. And they say, "What are you thinking?" You're like, yeah, cool. You didn't even catch anything that they said, but you try to kind of catch up with what's taking place and maybe dial back into that conversation. This happens quite a bit. We're busy. We have a lot of things that we need to get done. As children, I believe that they sense that, and that's taking place. And so part of service is actually being with your children, being where you are, being present for their needs, for their joys, the things that they want to show you, the things that they want to do. Be where you are. This is an act of service in itself. Service of doing the little things, helping your spouse or helping your kids with the little things. I mean, Jesus got down on his hands and knees and washed the disciples' feet. We can get down on the floor to play with our kids, to be there for them. The service of listening. This shows value and worth to our children. The service of being real. Children just need to see parents struggle and handle the challenges of life. And even being vulnerable, saying, "I don't know how we're going to handle this." We're going to pray and we're going to rely on God. I was talking to a person this past week, and we were talking about parenting. As we were talking, this person was sharing some of the hurt and the pain that they have been reflecting on as they think about parenting. And I asked this person to share just a little bit more about it. I said, "You know, I'm a young dad. What? I'm all ears. Tell me a little bit about what you've learned, or maybe what I can learn or provide for my children." And this person said, "You know, as I think back over that time, I recognize that I was selfish. I was selfish." And, of course, I'm hearing this partly because I am selfish too. And this person, it struck them. They were speaking from their heart, you could tell. They said, I wish I would have been there more, shown my love in more tangible ways." I think for parents out there, you need to take those instructions, take those words of advice. Be there, be present, serve. Jesus continues in verse 44, "And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." So Jesus continues to talk about service, but what I want us to notice in these verses is Jesus has a crystal clear why for his life. Jesus knew his why. He knew what he was up to. He knew what he came to do. I'd like to think about that for parenting. First of all, what are your hopes and dreams for yourself as a parent? And then what are your hopes and dreams for your children? Why are you in this? What drives you as a parent? Of course, if we think about our kids, we could think, well, I want my kid to be a national merit scholar or a world-class athlete, the homecoming king or queen, or an award-winning actress or musician. And those kind of desires can drive our parenting. But in all of this, you have to ask the question, where is Jesus in this? Timothy Keller, he is writing about idolatry. And he said, a form of idolatry that I'm seeing in our world today that I think we really need to take notice of is the worship of our kids. That sounded weird. How do we worship our kids? His point was, we allow the kids' schedule, them gymnastics and basketball and piano, we allow the kids' schedules to dictate how the family operates. And so everyone is held captive to the kids' schedule as opposed to being held captive to the truth of Christ. And so parents are run ragged. Parents are using up all of their resources. And the kids, where are they spending all of their time? Who are they around? What are they doing? And what are they seeing the parents value? I think we just need to take heed of that. I'm convinced that if our why is to lead our children to know Jesus, we will, with certainty, we will get them to church. Think of the words of the Hebrews writer, don't give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing. It might be weird to be in church, but isn't that our call? To Bible class, to children's ministry activities, to youth ministry activities, we will get them to church. We will get them serving, tangibly caring for others, following in the way of Jesus. We will get them praying. Now, if your child's, and this is for me too, if your child's prayer life is contingent on how you pray and how often you pray, what kind of prayer will your child be? Or, with the Word of God, if your child's dedication to the Word and time in the Word is modeled after your time in the Word, will your children be students of the Word? Will they be in the world? Will they be people of the Word? This is a quote that so many of us know so well. Leaders can't take others where they're not willing to go themselves. You can't take your children to Jesus if you're not going to Jesus. And then this. We are to see our home as a mission field. In Mark 5, 1 through 17, this isn't on the screen, but you have the story of the demon-possessed man. I mean, the guy is crazy. Now, I'm not talking about demon possession because we're pretty confident some of our kids are demon possessed. I've had that thought a few times, just recently, actually. Just yesterday, as a matter of fact. So I was trying to exorcism. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. So, but in Mark 5, 1 through 17, we have the story of the demon possessed man. And the people are terrified of this man. They're trying to chain him up. He's just breaking the chains. Imagine the strength that someone would have to just break the chains. He's living among the tombs. He's crazy. He's crying out. Folks are terrified of him. We know how the story goes. Jesus heals this man. He sends these demons out of him. They go into these pigs, and the pigs run into the sea, and people are just amazed by the power of of Jesus Christ. And here's the interesting thing, and this makes so much sense, right? So this demon-possessed man, he's crazy. Nobody wants to be around him. And now he's back in his right mind. He has hope, and he has this normality in his life that he's never had before. And so he says, Jesus, I want to go with you. Wouldn't you be the same way? If this person has just completely changed your life, wouldn't you want to just be right by his side? Where you go, Jesus, I'm going. Who you talk to, Jesus, I'm talking to. Your way of life is my way of life. We're going to be side by side, arms around each other. Let's do this thing. And then here's what we read in Mark 5, starting at verse 18. As Jesus was getting into the boats, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but he said, go home. Go home to your own people. Some translations have go to your family or go to your friends. Literally, it is go to your own. Go to your own and tell them how much the Lord has done for you, how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. Tell your children. Now, I don't believe any of us were demon-possessed or anything like that. But all of us have been shown the grace and mercy of Jesus. All of us were hopeless and now have hope in Jesus Christ. All of us were lost and were now found by the rescuing power of our Savior, Jesus Christ. First mission field, Jesus says, go home. Tell your family. Tell your friends. Tell your own. And that's a great call for all of us. Tell your own. Tell your kids. Share what Jesus Christ has done for you. As parents, as grandparents, as people who know parents, let's be about encouraging our parents and others to lead people to Jesus. In all of this, let's be weird, because normal is not what it's cracked up to be. We're going to sing an invitation song here in just a moment. If there's anybody here, perhaps parents that are in need of prayers, we would be glad to pray with you or for you. You can come forward, let us know what's on your heart, and we'll have that prayer with you. There will also be elders available in the back. You can share with them what's on your heart as well if you would like. Maybe today you're ready to give your life over to Jesus and baptism, experience the rescuing that comes through him in baptism. We would absolutely be elated to witness you make that decision today. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship our God.
I once was lost in sin.